Welcome to this slightly strange Science Media Centre briefing, I have to admit, where we're responding to something. Have you seen it? Have you all seen it? Have you got access to it? Yeah, some of you, anyway. Okay, well, we've helpfully provided you with a summary, but... here to make themselves available to answer any of your questions and give you a brief summary of their response to the report are Professor Martin Parry, who is visiting professor at the Grantham Institute for Climate Change at Imperial College London and formerly co-chair of the IPCC's Working Group 2. Then we have Professor David Vaughan, who is science leader at the British Antarctic Survey and coordinating leader author for Chapter 15 on the polar regions of IPCC's... I can't do the acronyms. IPCC Working Group 2, that'll do. Professor Nigel Arnold, who is director of the Walker Institute at the University of Reading and lead author on the water aspects of the report. Martin is going to make some introductory comments, and then this is really over to you guys to see if you're interested and if you've got questions. And if you haven't, we'll be delighted and we'll all go home early.
Yeah. Right, thanks, Gary. Yes, I thought I would just speak for no more than 10 minutes. You can shut me up if you like, even before that. We wanted to make ourselves available because we realised that a previous time around we got right royally egged on our face where we didn't make ourselves available at what came to be called Himalaya Gate. And IPCC, in a sense, got a reputation for being, you know, very inept when it comes to communication. Well, we're not now part of the IPCC. Well, I'm not, though David is going to be, and Nigel as authors in the next assessment. So we're not speaking, you know, as part of the IPCC here, but as authors of the previous assessment. But as you know, the Dutch government has been undertaking a review of the regional chapters of the Working Group 2 assessment. Now, we don't necessarily, you know, aim for this to be a story. But what we felt is, going back to what I said, we just felt we ought to make ourselves available because any, I think, indications that we're not could be read otherwise and we hope wrongly. But also, we welcome the conclusions of this report, which essentially is that our conclusions are safe, sound, and reliable. But there are other things also that we need to talk about from them. The Dutch review came about because there was another right royal spat in the Dutch Parliament from the right-wing MPs, because we put in our European chapter that 55% of Holland is below sea level. This is not what the Dutch want to hear when they've spent 1,000 years, you know, confronting. But as the review from the Dutch points out, it was them that provided us with this information. So I think the spat was as much about that. But what the minister did was agree to a parliamentary request to see if there are any more errors in the report. They've undertaken this review and concluded that there are no errors that affect the conclusions from Working Group 2, which is good for us. But it's particularly timely because now the IPCC is about to venture into the next assessment. So it's important that what lessons there are, we learn from these, and we need to be open two lessons, and we need, you know, not to be defensive on issues, and I think that's the role that the IPCC is taking. Essentially, in the italics at the front of this executive summary, there are three points that I think are worth addressing. One is that our conclusions are safe and sound and not undermined. They mention one minor error, which I'm going to refer Nigel Arnell to address, because we don't think that is an error. It ought to be corrected. They make some interesting statements that we could be more transparent in future, or we could have been more transparent in the past. And it's worth us addressing that. And a third one, which is potentially more important if it's true, we don't believe it is, they think that we've singled out more of the negative than the positive when we've come to summarise our statements. We disagree with that, actually, and I just want to sort of touch upon these three points, and then I'll shut up. Regarding the sort of flagged top line, the conclusions have not been undermined by any errors. Good. That's a message, you know, we'd like the world to take. IPCC has taken a hammering in the past. I think that's undermined unnecessarily confidence in it. That's a pity. We had ourselves to blame for not, you know, coming out and talking about it. But They do make one point on that front page, that they think there's a minor error that ought to be corrected. In a minute I'll ask Nigel to say why we don't think that is the case. The second major point then is about transparency. The problem we were confronted is that governments in the synthesis report want everything to be reduced to a single bite-sized chunk. And so we produced this on the right-hand side as you look at it, a 32 one-line statement. Well, you might say that these are bound to be a hostage to fortune, but it's what was required. And the amount of conflation down, can I have the brick? From the bricks of that. Okay, the regional chapters are only a half, but it does require enormous amounts of conflation, reduction, whatever you like to call it. And PBL do say there are a number of points where they think we've overgeneralized. Actually, in most cases, we dispute that because we think the case is made. But they also say that if you're going to generalize, you need to be transparent at the sort of steps that it has been made. And our assessors didn't take that as a major issue because they felt, and in fact Dr. Bachari would still say, the job of an expert assessor is to do just that. Otherwise you're going to get a graduate student and say, here's the paper, the summary is this. But an expert assessment brings in a lot of unwritten and unstated things together with the literature, which is like cited, to make a statement about an impact in a place at a time. But those sort of bubbles of thought aren't recorded. Now, in the future, whether the IPCC should produce that traceable account of the thinking, I think is a matter that should be debated, but we can't go back and change that now. Is there a significant error of any kind in this report? The PBL say there is another error on top of the two which caused the spat in the Dutch Parliament. One was Himalayas and one was the area below sea level. And they say it's a statement concerning anchovy fisheries on the southwest coast of South Africa. Southwest coast of South Africa. What we've done is we've immediately errated that statement with another one, and you can go to the website and find it. Point two, that statement didn't travel out of the chapter anywhere, even to the executive summary. Point three, it's insignificant in terms of its sort of public interest and was never taken anywhere. But point four, actually, to my embarrassment, the original statement doesn't mean anything in the first place. And we can discuss that if we want to, and I can show you. It's a bit of sort of gobbledygook, but it shouldn't have been that, and it's been corrected. But we think it's trivial, but it's important that these things be pointed out. They have done, and we've changed it. And I have to say, I'm always dismayed when we find errors, and the point must be we must squeeze them out as far as we can, and certainly change them as soon as possible, and errata them. The final point, as I said, is potentially more important if it were true, but it's not, which is this. As we boil down our statements to 100, only which 30 are here, have we overemphasized the negative? We thought we were extremely careful not to do that. We picked up all the pluses and minuses in the chapter. We considered, and the words are, what's important for human livelihood and the environment? What's important for human livelihood in the environment, judge in terms of magnitude and timing and irreversibility. Those criteria are there. And governments wanted us to produce this reduced form document. And in fact, as the net effect of impacts from the work that's been done is that they have a negative effect on human welfare. And the fact is that government policies are more often than not designed to protect society and the environment. And more often than not, the positives from climate change, the policymakers would argue, can be mopped up by the marketplace, by autonomous adaptation. So we think there's good reasons for this, and it isn't that we have either consciously or unconsciously shifted towards the negative. On the other hand, the Dutch makes some important points, which is, do you want an assessment like this to be purely one about flagging up the most important impacts, which is what the summaries do? Should you also be doing something else, which is to talk about the whole range, even down to the trivial, even in, they're in chapters, but in the summaries, and that's something I think to be discussed for the future. So, I'm done at the end of the executive summary. EBL, the Environment Agency, discuss their criteria, they discuss their methods, they come up with a list of what they consider are either errors or comments on quality. And I've got a little PowerPoint here. They distinguish between the, and you'll see all this in the report, between comments on the summary statements and comments on the underlying material. They identify one minor inaccuracy, which we can test, one error of referencing, which we've corrected. They also make 10 comments on quality, and they're mainly about the amount of reducing down in generalization, which we don't agree with. We agree it's an issue, but we don't agree we've done it wrongly. On the additional material, in other words, stuff in the chapters which isn't carried forward to any conclusion, they identify 10 errors. Errors are things that they say ought to be corrected, and we've corrected 7, and we don't agree with another 3, which are references which we think are adequate. They say there's a better reference you can use. And we said, well, yeah, but we're not in the business of conducting a running commentary on the science as it progresses. They make 13 comments on the whole we don't agree with on the underlying material, which again are about emphasis of transparency and traceability. I think they're all good points, but they're all matters, it seems to us, of debate rather than ones that are a matter of incorrectness. There are, on the briefing note I've given you, telephone numbers for all the authors, and they are prepared to talk to you if you wish. There are telephone numbers for a couple of Dutch reviewers, Rick Leemans and Frank Berhout. They were independent reviewers used by PBL, and they're happy to talk to you. I should say that I wouldn't have listed them if I didn't feel they would speak resoundingly for us, but I know that one of them did their own assessment and considered that all but one of the Dutch comments were either trivial or inadmissible. Now that's their view. We don't take that view that they're inadmissible. I don't think anything is. We think there are some points that are trivial, and I've shown here in black that the errors that we've corrected are one typographical, the 3 are reference. One is a poorly labelled table on water, which, and then there is an incorrect transfer of information. There's a block of numbers in the European chapter, which includes some Eastern European information as well as Mediterranean information. And then the one incorrect interpretation is about this upwelling in the fisheries on the west coast of South Africa. But the point which we'd like to get cleared, which we feel is not fair, is that there may be one minor error in the conclusions. And we don't agree with that, do we, Nigel?
No. Right, I've explained, looks like it's a trivial thing actually. In the first paragraph in this executive summary, they say that the issue relates to some numbers of the number of people exposed to an increase in water stress because of climate change. And in one of the chapters, the African chapter, the number is quoted as between 75 and 250 million people. The Dutch review concludes that actually it should be 90 to 220. And I don't think we need to correct it for a number of reasons. And start off with, the numbers come from a rather complicated table, which you can't see, in a report published, written in 2003 and published in 2004, before this process started, which shows results on the numbers of people exposed to increased water stress for a number of different regions, for a number of different models, a number of different scenarios. And the chapter authors used the information that's published in here to come up with regional totals, and they calculated ranges. And well, the Dutch are arguing that they could have done it differently, and it's actually quite difficult to do that with the information that was publicly available. Now, we could argue about how you calculate these ranges, whether you look at all the models, all the scenarios, the combination of the different ways of looking at the information. But I'd argue that there's no point doing that because it changed the way the information is presented. The way they present this stuff in the chapter text is perfectly reasonable. And yeah, there are different ways of characterising these ranges, and it doesn't make much difference. But the bigger issue is the over-interpretation of the numbers, because this is a table with sets of numbers which are based on a series of assumptions and calculations and uncertainties and all sorts. And if you go in and try and calculate them in different ways and add them up in different ways, you're taking these numbers way too seriously. And I think it's entirely appropriate the way the authors of the chapters did actually present the numbers as really quite a broad range, because that's what encapsulates all the uncertainty and all sorts. Not least because the paper, and in fact the chapter, says that the numerical estimates aren't to be taken too literally. You know, the caveats are there. So by redoing the numbers and saying it's not 75 to 250, it's actually 90 to 220, I mean, that's over-interpretation of the information that the authors had at the time when they wrote their chapters. So we don't really think this is worth changing.
Okay. Done. Over to you.
Done, and it's a matter of answering any questions that you may have.
Tom.
A couple of things, really. The first is we have an agreement now between the IPCC and the Dutch government about what the figure actually is. We're talking instead of 55, it should be 26%, and that's an agreed figure, is it? We've resolved that.
Well, the Dutch provided that information to the European chapter, and the Dutch have now corrected it. Yes. So the IPCC
has
had.
IPCC.
Yes. I mean, we'll take what they tell us. We just wish they hadn't got it
wrong
in the first place.
Sure.
Because as you can imagine, and I don't know if any of you followed this in Holland, it was the most horrible discussion in the Dutch Parliament, the most unseemly spat, because it goes so much to their core, history. It's an elementary school thing, I think, that a Dutch school child knows. That's been corrected, yeah. And that's on the errata on the website.
Sure. Can I ask you about is the problem here the problem of conflation? That reducing, as you say, half a brick of information down to a series of one-line statements, that's where it becomes sort of meaningless, really. Is that... What do you think the real issue is?
Well, I'll say something, then Nigel and David might have issued it. It's what governments asked for. It's what they seem to like, because they spend hours in plenary, days and nights, working the words around them. they seem to want it. It does present a very big task. And even though one footnotes this, as it does, to say, look, the sources for this is back in the front page of the summary for policymakers, so you can trace it back. It is the condensation, the condensing that is there. And the way the Dutch approached it was, because they were confronted with these two errors, Himalaya and Dutch below sea level, a right-wing MP stood up and said, how do we know if there aren't more errors in there? And the minister, she was then, she's not now, it's a new government, said, well, all right, I'll ask my people to investigate it. So they took this list and they tunneled back into it, which is not normally the way I think one would reason and assess an assessment, but it's a fair way of testing them. So I would say it's not a problem, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge to do with global assessment, to bring it down. But, I think ideally authors would stop there. And we had 100 conclusions, and we had about a paragraph on each, and they were locked back into the text. As soon as it comes to something like this is the synthesis report, sorry, of all three. What do you think, David?
It's important to remember that the IPCC is very much the servants of the government that commissioned the IPCC to do the work. We are told how long the summary for policymakers will be, and even given a maximum length for that. So the authors have, as you say, a huge job in conflating down That's not trying to get round the job, because that is what we all signed up to at the outset. But it is, it does mean that for many authors, this is the main part of the output from the IPCC. Certainly for us, it's the thing we go back to and read. And the summary for policymakers is a difficult document to produce. I'd actually just like to backtrack on one of the things, considering you haven't seen the whole of the PBL assessment report. When Martin refers to errors, he is talking about everything that PBL identifies, all the way from what they clearly state as typographical errors to the much bigger things, which are a misplaced reference. I mean, there are large areas of the report that they've looked at, chapters that had no comments made about them. My polar regions chapter has actually come through pretty unscathed, uncommented
squeaky
on.
Squeaky clean, actually.
So, you know, errors, we are not talking about a whole list of substantial errors. We really start to pick over the bones and the detail of what's in the many hundreds of pages in these assessments. Nigel.
Well, the only thing I'd add is about the generalisation. Of course, summarises a load of stuff. A lot of the impacts and consequences are geographically variable. So you summarise, what are the impacts in Asia? Pick a random continent. You know, there will be diverse, and boiling that down to one sentence, it's, you know, a lot of the regional subtlety is lost, which is in these things here. So some of the comments have been about we've been far too over, the authors have been far too general, but it's because they've been read as being far too general. You know, changes in one area doesn't mean that changes always all over that area all the time are occurring. So it's the boiling down to a sentence is a challenge where we've got lots of variability in response. And the point that Martin's saying, that they tended to drill down individual sentences to see where's the information that underpins this. In many of the sections of the report, the beginning of the section will say, you know, all this is highly dependent on assumptions and the uncertainties and all sorts. And that tends to get lost when you then look at the sentence and you miss the context.
Okay, I've got almost everyone in the room. I've got Emily, followed by Fiona, followed by David, followed by Juliet. Have I missed anyone? And Louise. Okay, Emily.
Emily Hewitt from the Press Association. Given the impact that the exposure of these two mistakes made, obviously within the context of the run-up to Copenhagen and fallout, do you see any value in implementing some kind of safety net, sort of second level of review, if you like, basically doing what the Dutch did before the Dutch do it, or do you think that's just far too sort of, you know, just going to make things far too complicated? And more generally, do you think that the overall findings of the Dutch review will draw a line under what has been a difficult time for the IPCC?
Well, I think what comes out of the Dutch report is a strong endorsement of what we concluded. I mean, they went into everything with a fine-tooth comb, and we spent 2 months kicking all the questions you haven't seen here into touch through explanation. No, it's not that. Oh, I see. Okay, so that one's out. You know, what you're left with is a residue here of about 15, and as David says, they're mainly about references, and you can call them trivial or not. But so I don't think this points to. I think this is a useful check, and it confirms solidity and credibility and reliability. And personally, I wouldn't see any need to go back and have a safety net of any kind. I mean, this is 1,000 pages. There's probably 750,000 statements in there. I was just thinking last night when I couldn't get to sleep, thinking you guys giving me, terrorising me today. Well, you know, scientists are human beings. There are bound to be. I bet you. You know, there are. I'll stop there. I can certainly find enough. In this report, actually, if I wanted to, several typos within the six pages. Indeed, I might have some pleasure in the next week of writing to the Dutch saying, Adopting your criteria of inconsistency, traceability, inaccuracy. Here's my. But what's the other point? The latter part of what you said. Will it draw a line? You know, I think it will. It's a battlefield now. This is a huge issue. Climate change is, I think, agreed as, you know, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, challenge facing us. It's going to require some really huge actions that some people perceive as a major cost to them, and they perceive it, rightly or wrongly, as a threat. And it's a battlefield, and unfortunately, scientists are, you know, to some extent, in the middle of this. We've just got to get on and keep going and produce the most credible assessments. So whether it draws a line in terms of the debate, I think is very much outside the scientists' hands. And as Richard knows, because he found some, you know, some of our authors have been getting a dose of very unpleasant email, fortunately not in this country, but overseas. So it's become quite personal. And I don't expect that to stop.
There's a couple of things I think this review and all the other stuff that are going to change next time around. I think one is that within the fifth assessment report, we're going to be looking much more closely across chapters to make sure we're consistent and we're using the same information and all sorts. And that's part of the sort of, each time the review is done slightly differently, learning from what happened previously. And I think that's quite a good suggestion from here, and I think that's going to happen. The other thing that's done, actually, with this review is a lot of the comments have been about understanding and interpreting information. And one of the things that I know quite a few of us, as authors of papers in the scientific literature, have done is we try to be really clear when we're writing the papers how the information should be interpreted in the future. So, for example, this, you know, the original paper that some of the water numbers in, if I'd have known the information was going to be used in this way 5 or 6 years later, I wouldn't necessarily have written it in that way. So we're changing the way we're writing things so that it is more easy to be used for assessments and all sorts. So I think that's not an IPCC thing. That's almost a writing science stuff. It's being more explicit about what assumptions are and providing information in ways that perhaps other people will be able to use and pull together.
David?
Very quickly. The fourth assessment review was highly reviewed before it was published, and you know, we went through many stages of governmental and expert review that involved scientific experts, NGO participants, all sorts of people. So it was heavily reviewed. Whether we would actually ask for this kind of independent line-by-line review, I think actually is something that we should do internally, really checking back all the statements for citations. This report has come at a very good time. Last week, the authorship for the fifth assessment review was announced by the IPCC, and those of us that are in positions to actually, you know, influence that process are really starting to think about what do we need to do next time so that in 10 years' time, I'm not sitting here trying to defend ever smaller issues. But we clearly it's a great time to be doing this, because we should really now be focusing as scientists, certainly, on the next assessment, which is pressing